Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3, while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Right. We're talking with Siobhan Scott right now about the Melody Buzzard case, about how we got here, about all these yellow flags, all these red flags over and over and over, where people were trying to say there is something wrong here. This is not safe for this child. And Todd, to your point, the relatives did say they were cut off. They were denied contact for extended periods. Now, we don't know much more beyond that. I don't have many statements. We don't know. Did they call multiple times? Did they call one time? Did they call at all? Did they just visit and go, you got to get your shit together, girl? And then nothing happened. We don't know. We don't know exactly what took place. But that's a big problem, because we've seen it in many cases where there is the infrastructure there. There are the loving grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends, whatever, that are ready to step in and take those children and care for them the way that they need to be until eternity, or until that parent can get their shit together. But the system allows the parent who doesn't have their shit together to make that decision. It doesn't allow for the authorities to make that decision. It doesn't allow for the kids to make that decision. It doesn't allow for the 10 sane people over here who don't believe the government is listening to them through their dentures.
And the microwave.
It allows the person who thinks the government's listening to them through their dentures to make the decision of what's best for the child. And that is the big problem, is the system is working as it's designed right now. Is that fairly accurate, Siobhan?
Sure. Yeah, I would say that it's working exactly the way it's designed. And somebody made a comment right now. It's just tragic that there are so many people who would be wonderful parents who are dealing with infertility and can't have kids. And yet you have somebody who's a 15-year-old in the backseat of a car who's pregnant, and other people who are so desperately trying to get pregnant and can't. And it's rugged.
Relatives say that they were cut off, denied contact for extended periods here. I want to talk about that, and because that's the brick wall so many people run up against if they're facing an Ashley Buzzard in their family or somebody that they know when they're trying to step in. Calling, reporting over and over and over, what else can people do when they're basically, you know, you got to deal with the situation and the tools that you have, and you're limited. What tools what tools can be used to push the envelope as far as it needs to go so kids can get the help that they need when they got a mom like Ashley Buzzard?
I think, you know, we're somewhat limited. The other thing that people can do is try to hire a lawyer, somebody who works in these kind of cases with family law experience, and see if there are other, you know, things they can file with the court to try to get visitation. Ideally, we would do a better job with, you know, coordinating law enforcement, schools, and mental health folks, and having crisis teams that you can call and say, just do a welfare check, get out there, get in that house, and then just keep calling multiple agencies, because the more you can keep the fire going under a situation like this, the greater the odds that you're going to get eventually some kind of response that may be helpful.
I mean, does a court need to step in at some point? Is there any levers that can be pulled? I mean, I know some, you know, there are situations where people can get into a 72-hour hold and things of that nature for mental health emergencies. But I mean, the bar has to be a certain point. And again, we go back to local jurisdictions and everything depends on how they're handling everything. Yeah. But I mean, at what point, I mean, what is the bar here? So many people are, I think, baffled if they're into these situations at just the hoops of fire that you have to jump through to simply try and protect a child that's literally burning in a pit on the other side of the hoop of fire you're jumping through to save them out of.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's the bar is so high and it shouldn't be. And we don't take enough action. We don't move quickly enough. We don't get people into some situation where they're going to be evaluated. And it's traumatizing for, I think, people that are aware of this that work in the system as well, because they feel like their hands are tied. And the more outreach we can do, whenever there's a yellow flag, start getting somebody in the home. Homeschool families that don't show up for their meetings, you know, when there are, you know, school districts that require them to have some kind of a meeting, you know, that should get an immediate response of someone in the home. But yeah, you can go into a house where there's hoarding going on, where it's, you know, somewhat dangerous hygienically, where the children are not bathed, and that's not really enough to, you know, meet the bar of these kids need to be out of there.
And that's the reality, is the bar. I mean, we have a bar very high to get in and say that there's a problem, but the bar is so low for what they're allowed to maintain and live in with their children. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm going to assume it kind of comes down to, at the same point, the people who are making these decisions, the CPS workers going in there, also know, okay, well, what's the lesser of two evils here? Is it keeping the child in this hoarding house where obviously poor decisions are being made and this pile of shit could tip over at any time, possibly kill them? Mm-hmm. Or let's throw them to the system of we don't know where they're going to land.
Right.
It could be far, far away. And it's luck of the draw as far as who is screened well enough to be a parent and for what reasoning they're being a foster parent. There's great ones and there are monstrous ones.
Yeah.
And again, you are a complete luck of the draw. So it's none of this makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Yet we just keep going down this road of, well, this is how our system works. This is how we handle things. I mean, if you could enact something, if there could be something in the terms of legal levers that would be pulled or put into place, what needs to change, Siobhan, in your opinion, from everything that you've seen? What sort of across-the-board laws do we need in our country that would protect kids far better than what we're doing right now?
Yeah, it needs to be safety first and more of an awareness with training in the court system about, you know, as I say, trauma for children and what children's basic needs are to thrive. And safety first should be a national policy. And I think other countries do a better job at that than we do. And, you know, it's just, we're not doing it at this point. Mm-hmm. And understanding that, as you said, people who don't have the capacity to meet their kids' basic needs in a functional, effective manner, you've got to acknowledge that sooner rather than wait until these kids are damaged or even killed in some cases.
I mean, is part of that thinking and part of the reason why we let this happen because many people, many of us come up from places that were difficult and some of us succeeded. Some of us, you know, did good and like we didn't repeat the pattern of where we came from. And some look at that going, well, it benefited me. I pulled my bootstraps up and made it. And in some sort of weird, darkly cathartic, you know, selfish way, are people looking at difficult situations that children are in going, well, it'll make them, it's character building. It'll make them stronger in some way, shapes, and forms. I feel like some of that goes on with the way that everyone examines these situations through their prisms.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just a lot more comfortable to entertain the idea that, you know, kids can come out of this and be functional and normal because most of the time they don't. You know, I talked with one social worker once who was so frustrated about a case because the parents were heavy meth users and who knows what other substances, right? Because if you've got that, you've got other things going on too. But her only recourse was to say, you've got to get the needles off the floor out of the reach of the kids. And, you know, talk about a low bar, right? I mean,
it's not even a bar. That's just like nothing. Yeah. It's like, and how is that? How is it even possible? How is the system saying that this is all you have to do? Tell them to get the needles off the floor. Who's making that call? Where is that in the handbook that it says, this is all you have to do?
Yeah, I think there was probably a checklist, you know, was there food in the refrigerator? Yes. Do the kids have shelter? Yes. Do the kids have shoes and clothing? Yes. And so it just didn't, you know, they have to come up with a score. Here's the checklist. And okay, the needle's on the floor, that's a problem. But that doesn't meet the standard to take action to get the kids
out. That's not like an immediate, like, you're out.
Right, right.
Do we, I mean, God. Because then at the end of the day, true, because here's the big problem. If we were to enact some real sensible changes here, if we were to say, look, needles on the floor are not okay, that's an automatic, you lose your children.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you do this, you automatically lose your children. If we started putting the automatics in there, there's not enough places for these kids to go.
No. And that's why
we keep them in these squalor situations because we don't want to fund anything that could give them a safe place to go because we don't have a safe place for them to go.
Yeah, very, very true. Quality foster homes are, you know, because we do know kids will do better in a family situation with parental figures who are nurturing and attuned to them. But we don't have enough of those places. And unfortunately, sometimes you have people who are fostering not because they really love and care about the kids, but because it's income for them. And we see bad outcomes from those cases. And then the system, you know, people rail about why were these kids placed in foster care and then ended up dead there, you know, or molested or something.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard. I could not work in this system just because the amount of contact I've had with abused kids tears me up emotionally. Yeah. I had one mom who really was in this category of not having the capacity to parent well, and she was limited in a lot of ways, including cognitively. And she brought in her little boy. I was working with the child. I think it was funded by CPS at the time. And so I was trying to do therapy with the little boy, and there was really nothing wrong with him other than inadequate home life and inadequate parenting. And mom brought him in one day with an ear infection. And she had a $10 copay for the antibiotic, and she didn't have the $10. And so she couldn't get him medication to clear up the infection. Who gave her the $10? I gave her the $10 and said, go get the medicine. And it's just, it's something most people would rather not think about.
And the compassion fatigue that will end up being so prevalent with caretakers and people like you in the mental health system, in the, you know, medicinal medicinal. That's not what I meant. You know, in the medical field. I mean, it's just every contact they have with these cases. I can't tell you how many times I paid for veterinary care for animals that couldn't, you know, the people couldn't do just the most basic thing. They brought them in, they got a free exam because they were a first-time client, but they couldn't pay for medication that the animal desperately needed.
Yeah.
I did that out of pocket. You can't keep doing that. It takes a toll on you as much as you want to and you need to. You just can't keep doing it. And our system is not set up for people who can't afford care.
Right, right. And I can totally see you doing that. So bless you.
Yeah. You can't. You can't, because you can't rescue people from all of their problems over and over and over. It's just, that's not the solution. The people with the problems need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. I mean, and at the end of the day, take the kids out of it. You have just, you have hordes of people that can't manage basic life. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of it. And they reproduce faster than others. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with a massive issue here of hordes of incompetent zombie-like beings that some, you know, probably can be educated and fixed and helped. Others are going to eternally be just wreaking havoc wherever they go, because that's the card they were dealt when sperm met an egg, because it was two other people that were just as messed up. Mm-hmm. And we don't seem to have any real plan to deal with any of it other than just, well, let them keep fucking. This is, you know, I mean, it's true. I mean, I'm harsh on it because, but it's true. It's what we're dealing with. And how do we deal with that? I have no idea.
But
I would think the first step would be not allowing to continue to have children might be part of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very, very frustrating. And the other piece of it is kids who are really poorly parented, you know, from birth on, most of the time do not end up functional people. And so then you have this cycle of, you know, a lot of people who function very poorly and don't raise the kids well. And then you have a whole new generation that is, that's why I think we have so many social problems in this country. Yeah. Because, you know, you've got generations of people who are doing a very poor job, inadequate job, let's say, of raising their kids.
Yeah.
It's an interesting comment. MNT7949 said, and I don't know if this is true, and I'm not questioning what you're putting here, but I just want to qualify it. It says, as someone is getting close to becoming unqualified for SNAP, they are required to attend a class. The class outlines life changes which may keep them qualified, one of which is having a baby. If that is true, it seems like an incentive to just have child after child after child to stay in the system.
Yeah, we have had a problem in that area. I'm not sure about that particular case with SNAP and if that's true everywhere, but it certainly could be. And it used to be that every time a person got pregnant, I remember in high school, I went to a rough high school, and there were girls whose goal, one of my friends, in fact, her life goal was, I'm going to have a baby and then I can get welfare. And of course, not. I'm not speaking of everybody who's on aid, because there are many people who just have something go wrong in their lives and they end up needing those services. So it's not a judgment on everybody, but there have been situations where people looked at this is a way out of poverty, is to have a child and then I'm going to qualify for aid to families with dependent children. So there's so many tricky ways that this can go wrong, and it gets really complicated on how do we fix it. I think funding Planned Parenthood, we've removed funding from it now because of political things, and we've eliminated abortion entirely in many parts of the country. And so people who know they're not ready and able to care for children are having children. And, you know, if the laws continue to go in that direction, you're going to have more and more and more poorly parented kids from people who don't even want to be having kids.
And more and more crime, which will continue to rise, which it's no coincidence that when abortion became legal in our country, roughly around 18 years later, there was a big dip in crime.
Yes.
I wonder where that would be. I wonder, because those people never came to the world.
Yeah. 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 That was a good
But then we're going to complain about it. Because yeah, it's a precious, we're going to care. We're a precious child. We don't give a shit. Once you're out here, you're good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck to the wolves.
I read that book too. That was a very interesting statistic in the case for that the crime rate went down once abortion was legalized. And I know so many women, of course, who have had abortions. And I don't want to offend all the pro-lifers out there, right? They've got their argument. I get that. But on the other hand, when someone knows, I'm 14 years old. I cannot care for a baby. And they're coming from a house with substance abuse and there's no support system for them. And you're talking about kids that are going to be raised in these kind of situations.
Yeah. Pro-life doesn't just mean, and it should, well, it shouldn't just mean giving a shit when the kid is in the female before it's actually born. It means you have to give a shit about it
100%,
afterwards.
100%.
And if you don't, then you're not pro-life.
Years.
Yep. So anyone who's sitting there like all pro-life, I'm going to stand out here with my sign, but then I'm going to criticize all these people who are making horrible life choices, who are coming from squalor and people making bad decisions. Well, guess what? You get to jump into that pool too and give a shit about them, because that's part of this. You can't have one without the other. So Yeah.
We want people to work. We don't want people on aid. And yet we still want to basically force them to have children that they can't care for and they can't get jobs, because who can afford $2,000 a month for childcare when you're only earning $1,500 a month to live on in a low paying job? And people aren't looking at the big picture here. They're thinking of these Band-Aids, and there's just not a lot of thought going on.
It's check a box, pretend it's not bothering me, la, 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 la. Everything is great in my world. Oh, did Junior just essay two 16-year-olds and nearly choke one out? Oh, la, 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 everything's great. That's the type of world that we live in right now.
Yeah.
Reference to the Jesse Butler case. Yeah. But that's how I feel. You know, that is how it is. Well, I'm glad we solved all the world's problems again.
Yeah.
Or just brought them all to light.
I think you're doing a big service by bringing them to light, because, again, it's just social denial. People don't like thinking about it. I mean, I don't enjoy thinking about it, but I still read these cases because I'm like you. I want to try to understand, where did we go wrong here and what can we do?
Well, what's most disturbing about the Buzzard case to me is, I mean, the system is working as planned. The fact that Ashley Buzzard could drive many states away, have a wig on her kid. People know there's a mental health problem with this woman. There's report after report of it not being a safe condition, but she still has the kid. She can make the kid disappear, tell no one where they are, and for a month not be arrested. Mm-hmm. It's like, really? Really? This is how this is? You can't arrest, like, some right here that she has that we can't really force her to talk, that her rights of not talking Trump somehow forcing her or coercing her or making her suffer until she spits out where the hell this little girl is, make her uncomfortable enough that she has to speak. But we have no mechanisms to do so. And we honor that like it's some sort of golden goat that we go, we can't violate this. But meanwhile, she might be dead somewhere in a ditch in Nebraska. We don't really know. Mm-hmm. Talk to mom. Well, we can't. That might make her feel uncomfortable. It might violate her rights. Mm-hmm. America.
Yeah. Yeah, it made me think of the Daybell case and how long JJ was missing. And at least we did have law enforcement kick in and start to get pushy about, we need to verify where this child is. But I can't remember how long it took before that started happening. But you did have the grandmother who was being a broken record about it.
Yeah,
and right.
She was. And that's a prime example. Larry and Kay Woodcock were all over it. They were being a broken record left and right. And what happened? The kids ended up melting in a bucket in Chad Daybell's backyard.
And
while those two are off in Hawaii playing the ukulele and getting married. Mm-hmm. On Shipwreck Beach.
Maybe there should be a Daybell statute that, you know what, after a certain amount of time, if you haven't produced your child, the Daybell statute kicks in and we go and find your damn kid.
Yeah, how about like 5 minutes? Like, if the police show up and where are your kids? And the answer is, I'm not telling you or I don't know. Well, then guess what? You're going with us. Mm-hmm. There should never be a reason that you couldn't speak to authorities as to where your children are. Mm-hmm. And if there is, then you're probably breaking a law. If you can't logically tell someone, my kids are over here and they're safe. And this is why. Yeah. I mean, granted, Lori did lie and say that the kids were at Frozen watching the movie. But again, that would require follow-up and the ability to do so. And
the
again,
movie's like 2.5 hours. I mean, so what happened after 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
Nothing. Exactly. It's like, they're over here. They're staying with it. Then prove it. But then you got the interstate dynamics. We need a national system that does something. Yes. Because right now, it's really easy to hide a kid, lose a kid, steal a kid, sell a kid, do whatever you want with a kid. Because there's not a lot protecting them if you have a nefarious caregiver in charge. Only in America. Let's hear a verse from the Brooks and Dunn song about this shit. I'd love that. Your thoughts in the comments section, everyone. We would love to hear them. And please do share this, because I can guarantee the algorithms of YouTube are going to go, this is an icky topic. People don't like to be uncomfortable. So share the shit out of it so people realize, hey, this is actually happening. And maybe things can change. There's a thought. Until next time, for Stacey, Todd, and Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.